starts off the following. It says, the Maral Diskin brings down from the following pasuk. It says, Perek Chofchas Pasuk Gavol, V'ato, Achrei Lefes, Aaron Achiko, as one of you two, shall bring close to you Aaron, your brother, and all of his sons, Mitoch Ben Yisrael, Lachan Oli, from all of Bnei Yisrael, they should be Kohanim to me. Aaron, Nadav, Aviu, Elazar, Yitomer, Bnei Aaron. Those are the five people that are going to become Kohanim. Aaron we know about. Nadav, Aviu, Elazar, and Yitomer are the sons of Aaron. Those are the five, the four sons of Aaron. So, here's the question. Mitoch Bnei Yisrael is a very strange lashon. The fact that it's, we're taking them from Bnei Yisrael, what's the purpose in saying those words over anything else? So the idea is like this. It could be that Shevet Reuven has a ton of Talmidei Chacham. That Shevet Reuven has an absolute ton of Yirei Elohim, Yirei Hashem, people that are tremendous people. That's all in Shevet Reuven. And there's one guy who's greater than all the rest, and he's a tremendous person. He would be the gadol of that Shevet. And then Shevet Shimon would also have a lot of Talmidei Chacham and Yirei Hashem and everything like that, but not as many as Reuven. Reuven has more Talmidei Chachamim than Shimon does. But Shimon has one gadol who's greater than every single person in Reuven. There's one gadol that's just absolutely the most special person of all time. So who's greater? Is Shevet Reuven greater because they have more Talmidei Chachamim? Was Shevet Shimon greater because Shevet Shimon's Talmud Chacham is greater than everyone in Shevet Reuven? Well, who would be greater? So which Shevet would you pick, like, the leader of Klal Yisrael from? So here's the deal. It could be that Aaron is only the greatest in Shevet Levi. But Shevet Levi has so many Talmidei Chachamim and so many Gedolim involved in their Shevet. There's so many people in Shevet Levi who are tremendously great that even though there may have been other people from other Shvatim who are greater than Aaron, even though there may have been people like that, but because Aaron was the greatest of Shevet Levi, which had the most Talmidei Chachamim, that's why Aaron was chosen to represent all of Klal Yisrael, because he's representing Shevet Levi, and Shevet Levi was the most important Shevet. To that, the Pasuk wants to tell you specifically, there is no one like Aaron. Aaron was chosen Mitoch Bnei Yisrael. He wasn't chosen Mitoch HaShvatim, of all the other Shvatim. He wasn't the greatest of the greatest Shevet, but not the best of all of Klal Yisrael. No. Aaron was the absolute greatest in all of Klal Yisrael. There was no one that was like him. No one came anywhere close except for Moshe Rabbeinu. And the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't chosen, we know, was already decided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Aaron was by far the greatest person to have been there. It's not the way you're thinking. That's the idea behind it. Now, let's go back to the beginning of the parsha. Something called Shemen Zayis Zoch, pure olive oil that's used for lighting the menorah. You should have this pure olive oil to be able to light the candles. Now, anybody ever see olive oil in a dream? Ever see it in a dream? Ever seen it? Never seen it. Well, then none of you are very wise. Because if you see olive oil in a dream, that means that you should look forward to Chachma. Just saw it last night. I went to look at the jar of olive oil right up. Olive oil is supposed to be, if you see that in a dream, you're supposed to look forward, look forward to wisdom, to a tremendous amount of wisdom. In reference to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was obviously the greatest Chacham in Klal Yisrael, it says, V'yikhu eilecha, to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, shemen zayizach. Take olive oil for yourself, because Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Chacham that was there. Now why is that? Why would Shemen Zayis, olive oil, represent Chochmah more than anything else? What is this olive oil that's so great that it represents this wisdom more than anything else throughout all of Klal Yisrael? So there's a Tana de Beilio Zuta, Chelek Beis Perek Chof Beis. It's quoted by the Ben Yishchai in one of his Sfarim and Chumash. It says the following. There was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. This is obviously a Maisa from a long time ago. This Talmud of Rabbi Akiva was the top Talmud in Rabbi Akiva's Shir. Absolute greatest Talmud. This guy knew everything. He used to go over all the Shirim to all the Talmudim. After Rabbi Akiva gave Shir, and people were sitting there spaced out because they had no idea what was going on, they would all go to this guy, and he would tell them everything they wanted to know. Everything they wanted, he would say to them, and that was the guy. One time when this Talmud was out in the middle of the Shuk, he was in the marketplace, he saw an unbelievably good-looking Zona. It was a Zona that was very good-looking. She was Jewish, but she was a Zona. And when Rabbi Akiva's Talmud saw her, he couldn't get his mind off her. And for days afterward, all he could think about was this tremendously beautiful woman. And he couldn't stop himself from thinking about it. And finally, he gave in to his taiva. He gave in to his yetzer hara. And he set up a time. He sent a message over to this woman. And he set up a time and he said, I am going to meet you at a certain place at a certain time. Certain time, and it was later on in the day. And he said, that's when I'm going to meet you. And he was upset about it, but what could he do? He couldn't get her out of his head. There was nothing he could do to get her out of his head. She was unbelievably happy about it. She's ecstatic. She knew this guy was. Usually she gets like the riffraff. She gets garbage. She gets like all the people are a bunch of Rishayim anyway. She doesn't, you know, so it's not anything. But this woman, finally she sees somebody who's in tremendous Talmud Chacham, who is swayed by her beauty. Wow. And she always has the thought, maybe he'll marry me, maybe this, maybe that. She was so, I guess you could say, unnerved by the incident, that she wanted to see the guy to make sure that he was really the great Talmud Chacham that everybody said he was, and yet still was swayed by her beauty. So he wanted to go see her. So she went to his Beis Medrash, where Rabbi Akiva taught, and she went to the Beis Medrash and looked in. And she looked in and she saw this Talmud giving shir to all the other Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had finished his shir. People wanted to know exactly what Rabbi Akiva meant. And this Talmud was standing up there giving the shir over to everybody else. And she saw it and she was just awed. She said, oh my gosh, this is how great this guy is. He's the greatest in Rabbi Akiva's shir. And she saw him sitting on the right side of Rabbi Akiva himself. She said, I can't believe this. He looked like a malach. She said, I can't do this. If I'm together with him, and I cause him to be off the derech, if I cause him to sin, then people are going to have tainas on me forever. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have tainas on me for all time. I can't allow that to happen. I'm going to go to Gehenna for this. No, she didn't think she'd go to Gehenna for what she was doing up until now. But for this, for swaying this guy, she thinks this is what's going to happen. So what did she do? She decided she was going to stop him no matter what it takes. She sent a message back and said, don't come. But the guy couldn't stop himself. He came anyway. And she decided herself, she wants to do tshuva. She herself wants to do tshuva after this mitzvah, so she's not going to do this act ever again. She said to him when he came, she said to him, why do you want to lose, you know, all of your olam haba for one minute of hana in this world? Why would you do such a thing? That's what the Zona is telling this guy. The guy wouldn't listen. The guy's like, listen, I have a taiva, just stop it. I want to take care of my taiva. As he said, she said to him, it's a disgusting thing to do. The area is this disgusting area. It's where one goes to the washroom. It's a disgusting thing. You don't want to go anywhere near that. He said, I don't care. It doesn't make a difference to me. I have to do this mitzvah. I'm going to go ahead and do this mitzvah. So finally she said to him, I'm going to do something that's going to make you stop. And she did something that was absolutely disgusting. And he lost his taiva forever. And he never got married after that. And he stuck to Torah learning his entire life. And a bas kol came out and said, she and he are zocha to chayei olam haba. They're both zocha to chayei olam haba. And this is an unbelievable measure. You can start off in the beginning. I don't know. But this is an unbelievable maisa. The whole thing is mufrach. The whole... You can ask questions on almost every step of it all the way. Why not just not show up there? Wouldn't that be... If she doesn't show up, what's he going to do? And then maybe she thought that he would keep chasing after her, but it seemed to be something strange. Says the Ben Ish Chai, the lesson that you learn from this Maisa is that his Torah protected him. The Torah that he learned up until that point protected him and didn't allow him to do the nasty deed that he was going to do. The question that Ben Ish Chai says you have to ask is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu let it go so far? If Torah protects you, then Torah should protect you completely. He shouldn't have seen her when he was in the shuk. He should have stopped himself from looking or turned away when she was in the shuk. Why did God have to let it happen that he looked at her, had a tremendous time before, and made her stop him from doing that deed? Why did it have to be that way? It shows the Koach HaTorah that the most bitter, strange, and evil situation can become the sweetest situation you could possibly imagine. From the greatest choshech comes the greatest or, the greatest light. Because you don't really notice. The fact that you have 1, 2, 3, 4, all the different lights that are in this room, you don't really notice it. If one would go off, you really wouldn't notice anything. It wouldn't make any difference to you. But if it was a dark room and you turned on one light, it would light up the whole room. That one little light would be the sweetest thing in the world. Wow, now I can see. But one light, when there's a ton of light around, yeah. One Talmud Chacham among hundreds of Talmud Chachamim doesn't really make that much of an impression on you. They're all Talmud Chachamim. If you have one Talmud Chacham in like a small town in the middle of nowhere, the guy's like, God, he is the Messiah. You look at him, you're just like, how? There's no one like him. But if you compare him to like all the other people that he grew up with and with everything else, I mean, he's no better than anybody else. He's just as good as anything else. But in the Choshech comes the greatest light. You know, Avram came from Terach and Amaslai. Anybody know that the relationship that Terach had with Amaslai, his mother, Terach and Amaslai, his wife, I'm sorry, but Avram Avinu's mother, that relationship happened when she was in Nida. Avram Avinu was a Ben Nida, which is supposed to be an evil person, according to the Gemara. But Avram Avinu grew out of that and became a tremendous, obviously, as we know, Avram Avinu, the leader of all the Jews, that's where he came from. Those who are stuck to Tuma can be the strongest and the greatest. That's why, did you notice the Baskol? She and he are going to go to Olam Haba. She came first. She went first. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything. She had been sitting her entire life. She had been a zoner her entire life. No, she and he are going to go to Olam Haba. That's a tremendous line. You ever had an olive? You ever tasted an olive? I can honestly say, I don't think I ever have. I don't think I've ever had an olive before. Never really drunk olive oil either. But olives are very bitter. Olive oil is very sweet. From the most bitter thing comes the sweetest taste. Can't say that about sesame seeds, even though sesame seeds also have oil. Hey, you can ask any Israeli. Sesame seeds, although they're not, I guess they're not sweet, they don't have a bitter taste. The more bitter you are, the sweeter the oil is. And that's the koach of Torah. That's why olive oil represents Torah better than anything else. So when it says, you should take shemen zayisach, the reason why we're choosing olive oil over anything else is because of the sweetness that comes from something bitter. So what can we do? What can we do? I've got like three stories. These are good stories. Number one, the avnet, which is mentioned in this week's parsha, the belt that the Kohen wore, that both the Kohen had and the Kohen Gadol wore, was supposed to be mechaper on hirhurei alev, hirhurei avera. If you had bad thoughts and you wanted to do an avera, that avnet would protect you. Why? Well, look where the avnet was. It was right around that area of the body. It's supposed to be a kapara from thinking bad things and from doing bad things, anything like that. A man came in front of the Magid Mezrich. The Magid Mezrich, famous Magid, Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. Magid Mezrich, he told them, I can't get these thoughts out of my head. I'm thinking about this all day long, whether it's about this or that or the other. I have all these evil thoughts in my head, all these bad thoughts in my head. I just can't do anything about it. How do I get rid of them? How do I take them out of my head? It bothers me in the middle of my Shemona Esrei. It bothers me while I'm in the middle of learning. I have images that pop up inside my head whenever I'm walking around in the street. I have all these things that happen. All these things are coming up in my head. How do I get rid of them? So the Magi told them, I have the perfect person for you to go to. His name is Reb Zev, Reb Wolf, they called him. Rav Zev or Rav Wolf, that was a Yiddish name, but of Zhidomir. Go to the city called Zhidomir. Go to the city, you'll see Rav Zev, everything will be taken care of. So the man said, what am I supposed to ask him? Magi said, don't worry, he'll take care of you. Take care of you, go right now. So the man went. By the time he got to the city of Zhidomir, from where he was in Mezrich, it took him like a day and a half, whatever it was. He came at night to the city of Zhidomir. It was already, all the houses were dark and everything, but he thought, you know, if Rav Zev was, I'm being sent to him from what's it called, from the Magid Mezrich, must be the guy's up. I mean, come on. The guy can't be asleep this early at night. He's for sure off. So he knocks on the door. Nobody answers. So he waits a couple seconds, you know, waits to hear like the rustling of the bed or whatever it is. Nothing. So he knocks again. And he listens. He waits. Nobody's there. That's the third time. Just a little bit louder this time. Nobody wrote nothing. He hears absolutely nothing. And he says, like, I don't understand. He for sure hears me. The house is the size of this table. There's no way that he can't hear me. It's not like this is, you know, a huge house and he's ringing the doorbell and they're in the second wing of the house. It's like a house that's 6 by 8 feet big. How in the world doesn't he hear me? What's going on here? And they all have guessed. I mean, this is what everybody did. So he yells out loud. He says, you won't have rachamim on a Jew? I'm a Jew. I have nowhere to sleep tonight. Please open up for me. And he knocks even harder. Nobody opens up. So finally, well, what's he going to do? He's dejected. He just sits down on a front porch, front stoop, whatever it was, and he falls asleep. The next morning, they open up the door. Reb Zev says, oh, how are you? Come in. Brings him in. He eats breakfast. He sits with them, whatever. He learns with them for a little bit. 2 days later, the guy doesn't ask any questions about why Reb Zev didn't open up the door. He didn't ask any questions about it. That's number one. And then he starts thinking to himself, you know, I want to go home, but I'm not so sure what Reb Zev is supposed to teach me. So at the end of 2 days, he asks Reb Zev, and he says, I don't understand, why was I here? Why did the Magid of Mezrich send me here? I mean, so Reb Zev told him, what was your issue? What was your problem? So he told them, listen, my problem was is that I had all these bad thoughts in my head, all these tithes, all these yirhurim in my head, and I couldn't get them out. But you never taught me anything about how to keep them out. What am I supposed to do to keep these thoughts out of my head? So Reb Zev turned to him and he said, if a bala bus doesn't want someone inside his house, he doesn't let them in. That was the lesson. And the guy sat there, and he thought, usually it takes about 3 seconds for you to fully grasp that story and to realize what happened. Oh, that's why he didn't let him in. It was the idea that on purpose, he purposely did not let him in to let him know that that's the way to do it. What do you mean? If you're a bala bus of yourself, if you are a bala bus, if you know that you have a body and you're taking care of yourself, you should know. Just don't let him in. Just get angry. Just say, no, absolutely not. So funny. I mean, it always comes up. Revelio Bion, when this is supposed to be from him, but when he supposedly had surgery, so they said that, you know, normally he's put in a cast, and you're not allowed to move your arm. You can't swing your arm back and forth. So they told him that he's going to have to wear a sling. And he said, no, I'm sorry. This is Reb David Pivarsky. Reb David Pivarsky was a Rosh Shiva of the Panovich Yeshiva. He was one of the Magid Yeshirim. Told him he's going to have to wear a sling, you know, to keep his arm straight. So Reb David Pivarsky asked the doctor, he said, what do I need a sling for? What do I need to put something on? So he told him, well, you don't want to move your arm around. If you move your arm around, it'll hurt your arm, and you might do something bad to the, you know, it might hurt it. The surgery that we've done, it might do something to it. So Reb David Pivarsky looked at the doctor and said, who's the bala bus? Am I the bala bus, or my arm's the bala bus? If I tell my arm not to move, my arm won't move. Well, my arm decides what to do? My arm goes on its own? I'll tell my arm, stay right here, it'll stay right here. And that's exactly what he did. He didn't wear a sling once. He kept his arm like this for 6 weeks. 6 weeks with the cast on. Did not wear a sling. And he kept his arm. Never moved it. That's the power of a bala bus. Okay, we might not be on the level of Reb David Pivarsky. My hands move on their own all the time. It's not my fault, you know? It's just, they move around, they go all over the place. Fine. But you can start to think to yourself, if I'm a bala bus, I can stop it. I can stop myself from having those thoughts or from doing anything. However, you can't fool yourself. A man once came to Rabbanim Yipshitzcha. Rabbanim Yipshitzcha, I'm not there. I was looking up Sipuri Chassidim this week. I'm sorry. I only have this Chassidish story. The next one's not a Chassidish story. It said, the guy went up to Rabbanim Yipshitzcha. He said to him the following. He said, in Svarim, in these certain holy Svarim, it says that if you fast a certain number of days, X number of days, you will have a Gili Elio. Elio and Navi will appear to you. So the guy told him, he told Rabbanim Yipshitzcha, I fasted that number of days, let's say it was 50, I fasted 50 days, and I haven't had a Gili Elio. So what's going on? Why don't I have my Gili Elio? I don't know how a person can ask that. You know, like, I just stop. Okay, regardless. It says, I was supposed to have a Gili Elio, I can't believe Elio enough, he hasn't appeared to me yet. So Rabbanim told him, let me tell you a story of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov, when he used to travel from place to place, he used to have horses and a little wagon, you know, where he would ride, and there was a wagon driver, right? But the wagon driver and the horses themselves were not really there. I mean, they didn't matter, because the Baal Shem Tov always moved the pizza derech. So, you know, whenever he wanted to go somewhere, the horses would start off, and then all of a sudden they would find themselves in the next city. They didn't really have any effort. They didn't really do anything. The wagon driver, supposedly, his name was Alexei, he used to just let down the reins. And whatever it was, it didn't matter anymore, because the Baal Shem Tov took the wagon wherever he wanted it to go. That pizza there just took him wherever he wanted to go. So the horses were used to the following. The horses were used to eating wherever they stopped. In normal cases, normal situations, whenever they would go somewhere, they would stop at a certain inn or whatever it was, and the owner, the wagon driver, would bring them oats, put the oats in front of them, they would eat the oats, and everything was all good, or they would have water there, and everything was all good. But this time, because they weren't working so hard, so the Baal Shem Tov didn't feel the need to work the horses. They went from one place to the other, then to another place, then to another place, all within the span of an hour or two, whatever it was. And the horses, when they stopped at the first place, they were like, huh, that's interesting, we're not getting the oats. By the second place, they're like, it's very interesting that we're not getting the oats. By the third place, they said to themselves, wow, you know, maybe we're not really horses. Because horses get the oats whenever they stop. Maybe we're people. And if we're people, then we're going to eat when the people eat. So we have to wait for the people to eat, and then we'll be able to eat. They stopped at another place, and then the Baal Shem Tov and the wagon driver, they sat down and they started eating, but they didn't give the wagon, the horses, anything yet. The horses didn't get anything yet, so the horses thought, wow, we must not be people. We must be malachim. Because why else aren't we eating? It must be we're mamish angels, we're malachim mamish, and we don't eat because we don't need to eat. There's no worries. We don't have to do anything. So they sat there and they said, oh, wow, we're really malachim. They got to the final stop. Now the Baal Shem Tov is ready to stop. He stopped the wagon. Everything was sitting down there. Everything was ready to go, right? Everything was ready to go. And he took the thing of oats, put it in front of the horses, put the water trough, put it in front of the horses, and the horses went right into the trough, right in, and they ate like horses. They ate like horses. They went back to being the horses that they always knew that they were. So too with the tinus. Does this ring a bell to anybody after today? So too with any tinus. A tinus is only good if you don't end it by eating like a horse. If you eat like a horse, then the tinus did nothing for you. You're the same horse that you were when you started. But if you improve on yourself, and at the end of the fast, instead of, as they say in Yiddish, fressing a vek, and you go ahead and you just eat yourself to the ground, and you're completely stuffed to the gills completely, and you can't get rid of all the food. If you have so much food that you can't think anymore, then you probably didn't get what you needed. And he said to the guy, you want a Gili Eliyahu? Stop eating like a pig after you fast. If you eat like a pig, then you're going to be a pig. There's nothing you're going to do about it. You eat like a horse, you're going to be a horse. You can't fool yourself into thinking you're something that you are not. You got to remember that as well. And now the final story. Shnaim Layom Samid. I have one board that comes after this, but Shnaim Layom Samid. You know, this is one of the psukim that the Midrashim say is the most important pasuk in the entire Torah. It's an unbelievable pasuk. It's in Perek Chav Tes, Lamed Ches. V'zeh Shartata L'Mizbeach. This is what you got to bring to the Mizbeach. Kvasim B'nei Shana Shnaim Layom Samid. Kvasim B'nei Shana. There are lambs, 1 year old, two per day, Tamid. Continuously. Every day you gotta bring these two lambs with you. Wherever you go, you gotta have these two lambs with you at all times. Now, the word tamid is a strange word. You know what it stands for? The two tamids that you have to have with you at all times. Anybody know what those two tamids are? No, a tamid. It's a good call though. Shivisi Hashem Lenegbi Tamid. God is always opposite me at all times. There's another pasuk. No. Chatosi Negdi Summit. My sins are in front of me at all times. You gotta remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu is opposite you at all times. And you also have to remember that you have sins that are opposite you at all times. At all times you have those two things that are always in front of you that you always have to take care of. Then, if you realize that, then you may start to become a tzaddik. Here's the deal. There's a man, a great man, who still lives in Bnei Brak. His name is Rav Yaakov Galinsky. Rav Yaakov Galinsky was sitting next to a chiloni on a bus. There was a Jew who was not religious, sitting right next to him on a bus. And it looked like that the guy wanted to talk to Rav Yaakov Galinsky. Rav Yaakov Galinsky closed the sefer that he had while he was sitting on the bus. He closed up the sefer, and he said to him the following. Rav Yaakov Galinsky started off the conversation. He said, every Jew has to have a line that they'll never cross. It's got to be a line that they're never going to cross. What's yours? What's your line? It's a line that you will never, ever cross. What is it? The guy was absolutely shocked. The guy was shocked. The guy never thought of that before. Oh, I've got to have a line? I've got to have something that I can't cross? He thinks to himself, well, hold on a second. What's my line? He sits there, he sits on the bus, thinks, and finally comes up with a line. You ready for the line? I'm never going to be a goy. Never going to be a goy. I'll always be a Jew. I'm never going to be not Jewish. It's a crazy line. It's an unbelievable line. But I'm never going to be a goy. So Rabbi Yaakov told him the following story. He said, listen, when I was younger, so I lived in Europe, and I used to work for the Navardic Yeshiva. I was very young, I was 16 years old, but they sent me, I was very responsible, so they sent me to go get these visas. It was right before World War II. They sent me to go to get these visas from a certain place. So I went on the train, and the train had a stopover in a certain city, and I had about an hour where I could get off the train and go do stuff and whatever it was. I had about an hour to stop off and do whatever, and be able to do whatever I want, and then get around. He sat there and he heard the mayor of the city giving a speech to the entire town, the whole town. All of them got together, and the mayor said the following. He said, the Germans have asked that we lay down our arms and give up our city to them. So all the people were like murmuring. Some guys were saying, yeah, we should. Some guys were saying, maybe we shouldn't. Everybody was sitting there and saying, I don't know, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. Everybody's talking about it. So the mayor gets up and he says, you think this is what the Germans want? You think the Germans just want our city?
They just want us to lay down arms. They realize that our city is a crossroads by the train stations. They realize that we're strategically close to the Black Sea. The Germans realize what kind of a city we are. If we lay down our arms in front of the Germans and we allow the Germans to take over our town, it'll be extremely easy for the Germans to take over all of Eastern Europe. It's not about us. Hitler doesn't want us. Hitler wants all of Eastern Europe, and we're the start. If we give up right now, then Hitler has all of Eastern Europe in his hands. So we can't give up. We can't give in to him. We have to stop him here. That's what the mayor said. Yakov Galinsky went right back to Nevardik. He went right back to Nevardik, and he went to the altar of Nevardik, and he said to him, I heard an unbelievable lesson. If the Yetzer Hara tries to go up against you, you can't let him go anywhere near his final destination. You know what the Yetzer Hara wants to do? You know what he's trying to do? You can't let him go anywhere near there. If you allow him to go right up until the very, very end, he's going to get you at the very, very end. You have to stop him way before that. You have to say to yourself, I'm not going to allow him to come anywhere near that final line. Said Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky to the guy, if you don't stop doing averos that make you like a goy, it'll be impossible for you to not be a goy. Because at the end of the day, you'll just be a goy. You'll act like them, you'll look like them, you will be a goy. And there's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing you can do about it. That's what he started telling them. That all these averos cause you to have that problem, there's nothing you can do. We're in Parshas Zachor. I'm going to tell you a lot of crazy glashers from Shore. And I'm going to help you try to understand what it means to not let the enemy anywhere near you. Just pay attention to these gemashiras. They get a little crazy. Rav Shor says, we're the Zera Emes. We have Emes with us, and Amalek stands for Sheker. That's why when it says Parshas Mishkalos and Parshas Kisetze, and it goes through all the different weights, you can't cheat anyone in business. If you do cheat anyone in business, then immediately what happens? Amalek comes. Amalek comes when there's Sheker. We have Emes. And Amalek runs in. And I said last week, there's a pshat behind them. The reason why Amalek comes is because Amalek knows, where did we get our bracha for Parnassa? Think about us. We're successful in everything we do. Everything we do, we're always successful. The Jews are always top in whatever city, whatever country, wherever we are. We always have money. What's the reason for that? Because we have a bracha from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu got his bracha from Yitzchak. And Yitzchak gave him the bracha. Anything you want in the world is yours. We have that bracha. Who is supposed to get that bracha? Esav. And Amalek hates us for it. Because every day he says, I should have had that bracha. Amalek should have had that bracha. Amalek should have sat there and gotten all the brachas of Parnassa in the world. They should have gotten everything they possibly have. And now we don't have it. Now it's over to Yaakov Avinu. So if Yaakov Avinu cheats and doesn't believe in the bracha that he got from Yitzchak, then Amalek comes and says, well, you should have let us have it. And that's when he gets angry, and that's when he starts to kill us. Amalek owns two letters, Kuf and Resh. That's why he says, Asher Korcha Baderech. Korcha Baderech. Those are his letters, and the letters of Sheker. The letters of Sheker, he owns that Kuf, and he owns that Resh. And those letters are considered his for Tuma. And anytime it says the word kar, either it means carry is tuma, or it means kar is in cooling down, or it means kar is just mikre, something that's just garbage, just that just happens. It happens to be. It's such a coincidence that that's what happened in Klal Yisrael. The Arizal says that Amalek took the Dalid and the Hay of Kedusha. You ever notice whenever you mention Hashem's name, if you don't want to mention Hashem's name, what do? The Hay? The Hay with a little apostrophe, or a Dalid with a little apostrophe. Those two letters stand for Kedusha. Amalek takes the Dalid and the Hay of Kedusha. You know what he does? Look at the Dalid. The Dalid has that little bit of an edge right over there, right? There's the Dalid, the little line going up. There's a line on top, and there's a little bit over here. He takes that tiny little bit, and he turns the Dalid into a resh. And he puts that little thing, and he puts it onto the bottom of the hay. What happens if he puts that on the bottom of a hay? Turns it into a kuf. He took the Dalid and the Hay of Kedusha and turns it into the Kuf and the Resh of Sheker. Dalid and Hay. Dalid stands for Dalid Lamed Tuf, and Hay, as in Hay Aleph, is the gematria of 441. Or the gematria of Emes. Dalid and Hay stand for Emes. But he can take it and cut them all down and make it into Sheker. That's the idea behind it. And that's the reason why we have to be careful. Moshe Rabbeinu was pure Emes. Moshe Emes v'sorasso Emes. That's what we say, right? Moshe Emes v'sorasso Emes. So when the lottery of Haman fell out bedafka in the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died in, Haman thought he'd be able to take the Kedusha, the Emes of Moshe Rabbeinu, and turn it into Sheker. He'd be able to turn the entire thing into Sheker. Anybody know what the Mazel of Adar is? Anybody know what the Mazel is, the constellation? Come on. The constellation. Who doesn't read their horoscope in the morning?
Oh, I know.
What's wrong with all of you? Pisces, very good. You are a geek. I didn't know you read your horoscope. Pisces, it's Doug. It's a fish. Dalid Gimel. If you put it into Atbash and you switch around the letters, Aleph is tough, Bez is Shin. Anybody know what Resh is? Gimel. And Dalet is? Kuf. The Dalet Gimel turns into Kuf and a Resh. He wants to take that Dug, which is in the sea, which is full of Tahara, and turn it into Kuf Resh. He wants to turn it into the Sheker. You want to erase Amalek? Macho Timcha Es Zecher Amalek. Macho Timcha Es. Mem Tuf Aleph. MS. Speak the truth. Tell the truth, and you will erase Amalek. At the Rosh Hashanah of Emes. Aran Nivus, all of our humility comes from Nachnu Ma. What are we? What are we? Who are we? We're nothing. They throw in their Kuf and the Resh, and what do they come out with? They take the Ma, and they separate it. They put the Mem over here, they put the Hay over here, and they put the Kar, the Kuf Resh in the middle, and they turn it into Mikra. Asher Kor Kabaderach. They met up with you in the middle of the road. They just believe in, no, listen, it's not MS. It's not MS. It just happens to be. They turn it into that Sheker. Rak Ra Kolayom. They're only evil all day long. Rak Ra Kolayom. The last letters are Rak is a Kuf, Ra is an Ayin, Kol is a Lamed, Hayom is a Mem. For Amalek. Here's Rav Shor. The other letters, Resh, Resh, Chof, Hey Yud Vav. The other letters, the ones that aren't the Sofei Tevis, is the Gematria 441, which is MS. Our Avodam Purim is to make ourselves MS inside and out, to allow ourselves to be pure MS and nothing else, and that's why we drink, to improve our MS. Summary, Aaron was chosen to be the Kohen Gadol because of his own tzidkus. Shemen Zayis turns the Mar into Matuk, that's our potential, that's Rebbe Kiva's Talmud. We are the Bala Bust of ourselves, we can rule over ourselves. Don't ruin everything we've done by being horses. Stop ourselves early and not too late, and the power of Amalek is in the Sheker, Wa'al Koach HaZemes.